Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Now, over 10 years ago, my final guest today wrote a cookbook that became somewhat of an international sensation. She's now finally produced a follow-up. It's called The Flavour Thesaurus, More Flavours. Nikki Segnett, good afternoon.
Hi there, Brendan. Good afternoon.
And Nikki, these are not your typical recipe books. Can you explain to me the concept of the Flavour Thesaurus A's, Thesaurus I first?
Yeah, so basically I came up with the idea when I went to buy a book about what flavours work together. And when I couldn't find one, I thought, in a joking way, I thought I'll write it myself. And then about a week later, the title The Flavour Thesaurus popped into my head. And so what came with it was this idea that it would be like Roger's Thesaurus, if you know that. Mm-hmm. So it's a book that at the back has a index of you look up a ingredient and it gives you a list of the different things it goes well with. And then if you want to know more, you turn to the front and there's a paragraph about each of about 1,000 matches. So it's all about how to blend things together and what to use with what ingredients.
So these are not really recipes. This is the very building blocks of cooking. You've taken it down to the granular level. And the second one, the new one, More Flavours, is a bit more vegetarian friendly too, I gather, Nikki. You were criticised for not having enough courgettes in the first one, were you?
Well, that's right. I mean, the first one's got 99 different ingredients, including meat and fish. But when I came, lots of people were saying to me, oh, why didn't you include courgettes? And why didn't you include lentils? And all lots and lots of different ingredients that weren't in the first. And when I sat down and wrote a list of the ones that I hadn't written about, 95% of them were plants. So I thought, I'll just write it about all different plants. And that didn't turn out quite as I should. Writing a vegan book is very different to writing a general book. So I added back in eggs and cheese and honey and yogurt. And
okay,
I was away again.
Right. Is vegan cooking actually way more complicated than normal cooking? Yeah, because you have to find like the basic stuff in a really different way. Yeah,
it's different. And you do have to, I suppose, until you kind of put yourself in that situation where you are cooking vegan, you don't quite realize how much we depend on eggs for structure and how much, you know, we might use yogurt these days because we love that kind of, you know, lots of tartness to offset different flavors. So
yeah,
it just, I'm not writing really for vegans. I write for people who love cooking, either they're chefs or they're keen amateurs. So that's what I thought. Well, they're not really vegan, so I'm just gonna make it more vegetarian.
Yeah, my secret ingredient in most things is about a pound of butter, like, so that wouldn't be very vegan friendly. Listen, let's talk about a few. There's the obvious things that go together, but a few more kind of quirky things you have. So explain to me about coffee and yogurt as a pairing.
Well, this came up. So when I was researching yogurt, you know, I thought, well, I know most of the pairings. You only have to like walk along the supermarket aisle to see what yogurt works with. But then you get into, well, what do other countries pair with yogurt? And coffee kept coming up. So coffee yogurt's very popular in the States. It's popular in France. And I just thought that sounded really terrible. And I kept putting off trying it and then eventually tried it and thought it was really terrific. You know, it's a bit like there's an Italian dessert that mixes coffee with ricotta. And actually, it's rather like that, or like a very creamy coffee that you might get in a Paris cafe.
Yeah, you see, it does. It kind of does make sense, I guess, when you think about it. Chocolate and aubergine does not make sense to me, apart from the fact that, like, whatever you can use to disguise the basic shoe leather characteristic of aubergine is probably helpful, even if it's chocolate.
Well, I mean, chocolate and aubergine mixed together in desserts in sort of the 16th and 17th century in Italy. And again, yeah, it does sound kind of strange, but aubergine is a fruit. And in fact, if you slice the aubergine thinly and then put a little flour and egg on it and fry it and then mix and then you put, you're not convinced, are you?
No.
And then you put.
Okay, I'm thinking it's like a fried banana almost kind of thing.
It's. You know what it tastes like, actually? It tastes more like a pancake. So by the time it's got the chocolate sauce on, if you like a pancake with Nutella, you probably wouldn't mind an aubergine and chocolate dessert.
Okay. Or you could take the aubergine out of the equation and just have some batter and some chocolate equally. But yes, okay. Miso, I think, is probably... is the great ingredient of our time, isn't it? Miso and chorizo are the two most reliable injectors of umami and flavour into things, aren't they?
They are incredibly popular. A little goes a long, long way. You get a lot of flavour for your kind of for your buck, if you like. I like the way you say chorizo and miso as well. It kind of got a nice ring to it. I'm not sure the two together would be too great.
It'd be too much. It'd be umami squared, wouldn't it? So
yeah.
There's another interesting little nugget in there too, which is that we have all started changing white rice for whole grain rice, white pasta for wholemeal pasta, you know, to cut down on the bad white carbs and all that kind of thing. You make the point, they're completely different ingredients to their white counterparts. We have to treat them differently.
I think that was the key to me. The more that I was trying to substitute brown rice for white rice, and think when I'm doing my research, I'm really thinking about the flavor. I'm thinking about the sensory qualities of those ingredients. They just, brown rice, whole grain rice, it's just a very different thing. The bran that's still on the grains, it just gives it a very rich flavor. So where we turn to white rice and white pasta in the same way for a kind of, if you like, a pleasant anonymity that sits underneath the sauce.
Yes.
Brown rice has got too much character for that. So actually, if you taste it and you taste its nuttiness, then you kind of want to use it in very different ways.
You're right. It's not just a bland conveyor of other flavors anymore. It's a bit like, I think a lot of people think cucumber has no flavor, but cucumber actually has quite an overpowering flavor in anything, doesn't it? When you think about it.
Yes. And in fact, it's got a very clever way of letting you know that, which cucumber makes people belch, makes you burp. And the thing that makes you burp is the flavor. You can taste it when it comes back. So no, it has a very strong flavor, enough to kind of, if you like, make itself known in a Pimm's or in a drink.
Yes. I think when we get to cucumber belches, it's time to probably call a halt to the whole damn thing. I think this show has gone as far into madness as it can. Nikki Segnet, thank you very much. The Flavour Thesaurus, More Flavours, is coming out next week. Thanks, Nikki.
Thank you, Brendan.